Wepa with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Thanks to the great Jenny Green. Back with you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. It's Monday, the 12th of October, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, double world and now double European champion Sunita Pospure joins us to mark another medal haul for Irish rowing.
We're coming into the last 50 metres. Pushpure out in front. She's going to take the gold medal. Lovning looking good for silver. And Kiradu is pushed ahead and is now in bronze medal position. It's the last few strokes here. Sunita Pushpure is going to take the gold medal ahead of Austria's Lobnik for silver. What a performance from the double world and now double European champion, Sunita Pushpure.
Call-ups, confusion, and who's been cleared to play. Tony O'Donoghue and Stephen Kelly are standing by to discuss the new challenges for Stephen Kenny.
Obviously losing a lot of players today on the day of the game, and the team changing so much was another a lot for the players to take in, really. They showed what they're made of and their character by going out and putting in a good performance. Credit to the players for the way that they responded.
Plus, we've tip all-star Brendan Maher as the hurling championship is nearly upon us. And in racing, we've the latest on injury concerns for Gordon Elliott as his top jockeys Davy Russell and Jack Kennedy pick up some knocks.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game on 2FM. It is Monday, so that means it's time for our sporting highlights of the weekend. So send them in to 51552. There was plenty of sporting action, but I found that it was quite hard to find a real standout moment. That was until Sunday afternoon when I was sitting on the couch watching the end of the tennis and I got a WhatsApp video sent to my phone, and it was of Jimmy McGuinness training the Galway footballers. And I sat up, I woke up, I was kind of dozing, and I thought, you know what? Got something to play for here now. The championship is just around the corner. They're the Galway footballers. They're wearing their jerseys. Jimmy McGuinness is in the middle of them. We've something to talk about. We're going to be starting previewing the GAA soon. And I was absolutely delighted with life. And then it turned out that Pádraig Joyce, the Galway manager, was actually out for press today. And he spoke about Jimmy McGuinness's role.
Jim came down on Sunday there and in a working capacity with the football team, basically as a performance coach with us. And we took the lads for a session, which the lads found really good. And it's the first time he's been down, and that's his, there's no set role for him in the squad, so we brought him down. There's a lot of different aspects to training a team, as you know, as a guard. It's not just kicking pints or defending, there's a lot more to it. So just felt that we needed a bit of injection or something. So you know, looking for a performance coach, like, what a better man to get than Jim. His CV speaks for itself, and he's been successful in the game as a manager, so he knew exactly what message to relay to the players. Just to, we have been great friends, and over the years we played in college together, had a good bit of crack down there, and had a huge respect for the man, and vice versa, which is great. Like, so look, I always stay in touch with him, and yeah, look, it's mean, I know 6 months ago when we spoke about it, the game was called off during the week, lockdown came. Let's hope another one doesn't come this week so we can go and play it. But we are looking forward to it. Look, it's all county, inter-county footballers are delighted to get back and playing with our county. We here in Galway are definitely looking forward to it, yeah.
Now, Pádraig Joyce, the Galway football manager, speaking about Jimmy McGuinness. He was also asked in the interviews throughout the day as well about how he felt that the footage got out. So somebody obviously eagle-eyed turned up to the session, saw Jim McGuinness, trained the team, videoed it and sent it out everywhere. I'd say he was absolutely raging.
Marie, it's the world we live in.
Oh, yeah. His last involvement was 2014, is that right? So this has started the rumour mill into absolute overdrive.
Well, it's just that people have always admired what Jim McGuinness does. So, and mostly it's been with Donegal. He's had a few football outings since then. But just to see him back in with a team, and, you know, it's winter championship, it's all different. There's loads of different talking points. It's not like, it doesn't seem nailed on as much as it has been for the past few years. So it's just exciting. And Galway had such good league form as well. If they could add another dimension to it, I think Jimmy McGuinness could be the person to do it.
That's the same Jim McGuinness that got all the stake for playing the defensive football with Donegal, or is this a different one?
This is a Jim McGuinness that won in all Ireland. Like, this is a Jim McGuinness who beat Dublin.
This is the same fella we're talking about. I admired him, but you said whom everyone admired. I'm not sure everyone admired the brand of football Jim McGuinness played. Well, unless my memory has
deserted me. They might have admired the brand of football, but they admired his ability to win games, to win all Irelands. Like, that Donegal team, when he took it over, nobody expected them to be able to go and do what they did. So he did something phenomenal.
And then Ireland win all those medals at their own championship. There was soccer on, there was rugby on, there was racing on, and your highlights a training session.
Lad, since we've started this show, we haven't had championship. No, I just want to put that out there.
You can see the withdrawals in it, what is coming
down the track over the next few months when I get going. We haven't had championship. Let that sink in.
You're dead right. We have no idea what's coming down the track. You nailed that one anyway.
Okay, someone else give me a highlight. I'll stop now.
Go on, Donica.
I think Sunita was the highlight for all of us, really, wasn't it? She was just incredible. So looking forward to catching up with her shortly. But for me, it had to be the rugby. Bar Connacht not getting the result against Cardiff, who were strong, but I think they look back at that game with a bit of regret. But my highlight was the Bledisloe Cup game, New Zealand versus Australia. There's a brilliant link to it in the RT website if you want to read through it, and you get to see some of the footage. But it was just an absolutely incredible game. Finished a draw, 16 all, but it had everything. And before, I was kind of wondering, do we need elite sport? Do we really need it? You know what I mean? Is it fine for just people to play? No, we absolutely need this. Like, it was just two brilliant teams going at it, and they're in the middle of their cycles now for World Cup, so they're blooding loads of new players. New Zealand had three new caps, Australia four, and it was just, it was actually one of the best 10 minutes of rugby I watched. It had it all.
They usually have it, the All Blacks and the Wallabies going at it. But Donica, from an Irish point of view, watching the games of the weekend, Leinster, watching Jordan Larmour hobbling off with his shoulder dislocated, you could see the pain in his face when he was sucking on the, what I assumed was a morphine whistle, which don't necessarily work, but you could see the pain, and that's a
whole
fair
other conversation, I think.
Yeah, he definitely was. It's such a physical game. Every year, you never get any credit for playing Benetton and Zebra. They're so physical, Ruby. So bad to lose Jordan, especially at the time and coming into those rescheduled Six Nations games. So that was a bit of a blow. But it was a highlight for me with John Cooney as well. I think he put in a massive performance for Ulster. And that's the way to do it. We'll know better than anyone. You can go around whinging and moaning, but we had a brilliant coach, Larry Fitcher, and all he used to say is your only currency is performance. So that's the only thing that matters. And I think John Cooney went out and put in a massive performance for Ulster. Marcel Coutsi as well, what a player he is. I think he could be knocking at the door to get back into that South African squad.
What about Ian Henderson?
Yeah, it was bad. And look, I think you can say, oh, they're both yellows, but and we had it with Peter O'Mahony as well. World Rugby are so hot now. On it, like, there was a time that's how you cleared people out at rucks, but if you're clipping anyone now with your shoulder anywhere near the head or neck, it's just, we spoke about this before, remember, when we did four ruck clean-outs and all of them are red cards now. So the game has evolved and it's changed, and rightly so. We need to protect players, especially with how strong these guys are. So what about you, Ruby, a highlight?
I enjoyed the racing at the weekend to see three Irish colts coming home in front in the Dewhurst, St. Mark's Basilica, Wembley and Thunder Moon. Shows the strength and depth for them. Obviously, Willie Mullins won the Cesara, which is a great white shark, and another Irish horse was third in Tacarengo. So the race was my highlight. But I must say, actually, I picked up the papers on Sunday and I was reading the back of the Sunday Independent, and I was reading Eamon Sweeney probably giving out a bit about the GAA calling the club championship off. But when I got down to the very end of the article, I thought there was a great line at the end of it. It was a quote from the World Health Organization director, Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, who figured out his pronunciation. I googled it earlier to make sure I got it right. But finger pointing will not prevent a single infection. Apportioning blame will not save a single life, was the quote from the good doctor. And Eamon Sweeney rolled it on a bit further, but at the very end of it he said, the game we really need to cancel is not football, hurling or camogie, but the blame game. The fans of that one do more damage than anyone else. And I read it and thought, that's a brilliant, brilliant quote.
Yeah, I think it's very apt actually to lead into our first item of the show, and that is Tony O'Donoghue, who is standing by. Tony, in a weekend which is either, I'd say it's one you could either forget or you'll never forget, really, because it was just all about COVID, and it seems there's another development today. Could you fill us in? I know the Finland game is due to take place on Wednesday, but it feels like there's a long way to go between now and then in terms of COVID.
If you're the Republic of Ireland football manager, yeah, there's a hell of a long way to go. They were probably due to be on a flight around now, going to Finland, going to Helsinki. The flight has been put off until tomorrow because we're back in COVID chaos, you might say. There's, after yesterday's game against Wales, all got tested. The results came back this morning. And although it's unconfirmed, we understand that there's been another positive test from a Republic of Ireland senior international. And obviously that's very worrying for all concerned. Although in this case, I'm led to believe that no other player was deemed a close contact. So it wasn't one of the four players deemed a close contact of the other positive that knocked out John Egan, Alan Brown, Callum O'Dowda and Callum Robinson from being involved in yesterday's game against Wales. So another positive test. I think at this stage it's fair to say the FAI are probably a little bit sceptical about these tests, because you'll recall the FAI staff member who tested positive in Bratislava had tested twice negative before he arrived in Bratislava, tested positive in Bratislava. That test has now been confirmed by the HSE and the FAI as a false positive. So Aaron Connolly and Adam Ida, who missed the game against Slovakia, which, let's be honest, was the most important game, and they would have had a huge bearing. Connolly would have started. Ida would have come on at some stage and would probably have taken a penalty if he was still on the pitch. They were forced to miss that because they were deemed close contacts of the FAI staff member because they were too close to him on the plane. So now we have a second player deemed positive, and that's very worrying. The players that were all called up, because Stephen Kenny yesterday only had five outfield substitutes to choose from. So players called up were Dara O'Shea and Jason Knight, brought in from the under-21s, which has a knock-on effect on Jim Crawford's under-21 teams playing a huge game against Italy. They are top of the group and on the cusp of qualifying for the first time ever for a European Championships. Ryan Manning and Ronan Curtis were called up as well, and Ida and Connolly came back into the squad, and they've all had to be tested today, and we don't know when their results will come back, probably tomorrow morning. But definitely the scepticism I'm talking about in the FAI camp means that the player that tested positive, I understand that they're anxious that he be retested to see if it's a second positive or if it's a second false positive. A mess, isn't it?
It is, and it's quite complex. And, you know, even all the events over the weekend leading into the Wales game and the different interviews given by Gary Owens and given by Stephen Kenny, and Ruby mentioned the blame game isn't helpful, but there was a lot of that over those few days. Is that over now, do you think? Do you think everyone's going to be on the same page and try and deal with this situation as best as possible?
Well, I always like any of our sports people to be as honest and as eloquent as Irish people usually are. That's what you want from interviews. I think you might accuse Stephen Kenny of having misspoken, perhaps, when he said that the FAI staff member who tested positive in Bratislava wasn't an essential member of the travelling party. Maybe that was a little bit unfair to the person involved, but after the game yesterday, Stephen, again being very honest, said, like, what do you want me to say? He wasn't going to take the free kicks. Now, of course, he says he wants to treat everyone equally, and he does. That's Stephen Kenny's way. He treats people with respect, the people that work for him, be they players, be they technical staff, physios, opposition analysts, or people that work in the other areas of security or logistics or media, whatever. So he might have misspoke a little bit, but I don't think that's such a big deal. Gary Owens is saying that everyone that was on the flight had an important role and purpose, and I think they have kind of cut these trips down. There's no Blazers anyway, that's for sure. The FAI president did go to the game, but there was no other members of the delegation as such, apart from Gary Owens. And, you know, they face a financial issue here as well. Unless they were to, you know, get the biggest jetliner where they could guarantee that, you know, all the members on the travelling party could always be 2 metres away from each other if they were going by HSE and Republic of Ireland rules, they can't do that. They have to assume that everyone in the bubble can stay in the bubble, can stay COVID-free. And obviously that's not the case now, as we found one player before the Wales game and one player today testing positive. So COVID, sadly, is within the Republic of Ireland camp, it seems.
Gary Owens did point out that they are going to have a review. Tony, do we know, will that review have been completed by Finland?
I would say they'll have to wait till after Finland, and I think they'll look into it before the games next month. And I have to say, no, I think the games next month even have to be in question. When you look at, there was a reluctance, it seemed. Adam Ida came back into the squad rather quickly. You know, they were stuck over after being deemed close contacts in Bratislava until the clubs organised a plane to get them home. Then the other FAI staff members were brought home by a plane chartered by the FAI. Otherwise, they would have been 14 days self-isolating in Slovakia, which, you know, I think the FAI had a duty of care to their staff to bring them home. So then you have Adam Ida in Norwich and Aaron Connolly in Brighton, and then they're recalled to the squad once the false positive has been confirmed. Ida came back straight away, but I sensed that Brighton were reluctant to bring their star striker or allow their star striker to rejoin the fold. He made it very clear via emoji that he put his hand up. He was happy to be called back into the squad, but then he deleted that because I'm sure there was a bit of politics between his employers, Brighton and Hove Albion, and his country, of course, the Republic of Ireland and the FAI. But rules are rules. It's a competitive game. If he's called up, he has to attend. And so so he's back in the squad as soon as his next test, his new test, comes back and that he's clear of COVID.
We're going to chat to Stephen Kelly in a little bit just about the weekend's game against Wales. But before we get to that, Tony, just a word on Dundalk. So this is, we're talking about evolving stories, and this is another story that is evolving all the time. There's a report today that they are going to apply to UEFA to move the Europa League group stages matches to Windsor Park, saying it will cost $50,000 to split their games between Tala and the Aviva. Any clarity on this?
Well, I think this is coming from quotes attributed to Bill Hulsizer. He's the chairman of Dundalk Football Club. He's the father of the owner of Peak Six, Matt Hulsizer. And Bill is quite the character, I'd have to say. I've spoken to him. He has a lot of interesting ideas on the game. He's quite forthright in his views. I do believe that at one stage he wanted Gary Rogers, the Dundalk goalkeeper, to take the corners because he had the best kick. Which would have left the goal a little bit untended, as they might say in America. You know, Bill here is stirring it a bit, I would say. There is an issue. I think Dundalk should be able to play. I'm here at the Aviva Stadium as we speak. It's a brilliant stadium. I love it. It looks amazing inside and out. And I think Dundalk should be allowed to stay. There's an issue there over why the RFU camp end a little. They have the Italy game and they've got kicking practice. And it seems that's the reason that Dundalk aren't allowed in there. They've had to pay for all the branding, etc., that makes it a UEFA stadium, that classifies it as such. If they have to move to Tala, they have to do all that branding, etc., get Tala ready and the Aviva Stadium ready for the other two games. Bill is flying a kite a little bit, I would say, in talking about Windsor Park, because there's no suggestion that that will be given to them or allowed, and it is in another jurisdiction. But having said that, there's nothing wrong with having games in Tala. It's an excellent stadium. When I think about it, the likes of Ronaldo, he played his first game for Real Madrid in Tala Stadium. And we saw AC Milan play there, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, just the other week. So if they have to play in Tala, I don't think Tala's an issue. I just like if Dundalk FC, the FAI and the IRFU could get their heads together and organise a way. It shouldn't be that difficult in terms of logistics that the Ireland-Italy rugby game can be played a couple of days after the Dundalk game versus Molde, and that can be worked out. That shouldn't be that hard to do, in my view.
OK, Tony O'Donoghue, RT soccer correspondent, thanks so much for joining us. Now, the IRFU have released a statement on that. They said it would be operationally impossible for the Aviva Stadium to facilitate a short notice request from Dundalk. They said the exceptional grounds people and operations team at the Aviva Stadium were presented with the impossible task of having to repeatedly replace posts, clean all facilities multiple times, and crucially prepare, paint, repair, cut and repaint the playing surface four times between the Wednesday when the pre-match football practice would have taken place to Saturday for the pre-booked rugby fixture. They asked to effectively repurpose the surface four times in 3 days, which was impossible to deliver. So the IRFU aren't budging. Now Stephen Kelly joins us on the line. Stephen, there is a lot going on. Unfortunately, we haven't even mentioned any of the on-field action because we're talking about pitches and COVID and all the rest. But Ireland did play Wales on Sunday, and unfortunately they are still to get a win under Stephen Kenny. How worrying is this?
It's worrying in the fact that we just haven't got over the line in a win. But anybody who's actually watched us play in the last couple of games would have seen a vast improvement in our ability to keep the ball, in the way we're passing, in the way we're moving it, in our confidence in each other and actually playing the ball to each other, in the way we're approaching a game. In the final third, we've been lacking. But that's been an issue for a long time. We haven't scored many goals. Like, it's been going on for such a long time now that's been an issue for every manager that's been involved with the Irish team for the last 4 or 5 years. There's not been someone to put the ball away, and that's an issue.
In the last three years, Stephen, the Republic of Ireland have only scored 10 goals in 17 competitive games, and one of them was by a forward. So that is a bit of an understatement almost.
Three of them was by Shane Duffy. So, you know, you're clutching at straws when you think your centre-back is the top goal scorer in competitive games over the last 3 years. Like, that's ridiculous. And considering we're trying to go away from the fact of putting balls into the box and scoring set plays, and that's not what we're relying on. But, you know, as in a football sense, we definitely look like we're trying new things and we're attempting it. You know, the lack of goal scoring is a massive issue. We're never going to qualify for anything if we don't score goals. It's impossible. You can't win games if you don't score goals. We have to do that. But defensively, we look solid. We look better in the ball. And against Wales, even though it was a drab affair at times, and these games will be vastly improved if there was fans in the stadium. Like, there'd be no end how much better these games would be. But there was an improvement. We just can't get over the line when it comes to the sense of scoring goals and creating chances in the end of the pitch.
Stephen, is it possible at international football, with players that don't know each other, that it is a little easier to keep it and knock it around at the back when there's not as much pressure from other teams, that actually controlling the game in the two-thirds where it doesn't matter maybe isn't as difficult?
Yeah, it is. And I think there's keeping the ball and passing it and then doing it with an intent. There's no sense in just the back four passing it back and forth to each other and the opposition just letting you have it, because you're not achieving anything in that sense of the game. You have to be willing to break lines, pass forward, get men running in behind. And the best team at doing keep the ball and playing forward with pace at the same time, and you're probably going to hate me saying this, at Liverpool. You look at Liverpool, the way they do it. I'm not saying Ireland can play like Liverpool, but Liverpool are not afraid to smack a ball the diagonal 50, 60 yards, get Salah and Mane running behind the defence, because the stretch teams that push them on, then the place, the space in between the lines develops. And you know, we can be guilty, and I don't want us to see you come a team that are just comfortable keeping at the back four, because that's not how you want to play. You want to be direct, you want to be have a purpose about you, you want to play between lines, you want to get shots and goals, you want to get crossed into the box. So you know, there has to be some sort of middle ground where we're playing forward but we're also keeping at the same time. And the important thing for me is when we get the ball back that we keep it. I think it's one thing building up steadily, but when we give if we retain the ball or get it back off the opposition, then the ability to keep the ball and put our foot in it and retain it and then build possession in, that's what's almost most important for me. And you're totally right. You can get think, oh, it's great, we're keeping the ball, but if you're not going anywhere, it's a pointless exercise.
But then to the uneducated like me is the obvious reason, not just what you said. We don't have a Salah or a Mane to shoot along the diagonal ball.
Well, the thing is, you might not have a Mane or a Salah, but Liverpool are the only team in the world to have a Mane and Salah apart from their countries. You know, so when you think about it, you have to play, like Aaron Connolly is more than capable. If you put a ball over a fullback's head, he will harass and chase the players in behind. So it's all about using your players to their strength. And if you've got pace, which I think Stephen Kenny is looking to bring into him, he's looking to add pace and depth and strength into those wide areas so that we're more dynamic in the forward areas. And I think that will have to become a part of their game where we're comfortable coming short but then spinning behind, creating that space. That has to be an option. Otherwise, you'll never penetrate. You never break the line.
Stephen, we were chatting to Alan Cawley and he likes what we're about, the type of football we're playing, but we know it's going to be result driven. Just on the tactics inside of it, for a coach, can you work on set pieces? Could they be better in the last what?
Yeah, I think for us as well, like our main threat for the last probably three or four qualifying stages have come from set plays. Like, we have great delivery into the box. We have people that really put it in there well, like Robbie Brady, Conor Hurahan. And then when you have someone like Shane Duffy and people that are willing to attack the ball that are so hard to defend against, then a set play has become hugely important. The thing for us in the last few games is we've actually got quite a lot of corners. In Slovakia, we had a load of corners. Against Wales, we had a lot of corners as well at times. But we just haven't been able to, I don't know whether we've not been as content to put it in there. You know, we have been trying to find the big man, but we've just not been as clinical in those areas as we have been before. But to be able to do both parts of the game, to keep the ball, to be good from set plays, to be good defending set plays, to be an all-round team that can get goals from all over the pitch, that's what we have to try and achieve, because we're not going to get someone that's going to score every goal in a campaign. We have to get them from all over the pitch, and set plays are still going to be vital cog for us as a nation, I think.
Okay, well, Stephen Kelly, I think it's fair to say it's still a work in progress and it probably will be for quite some time, but we do have another game on Wednesday to look forward to. Thanks so much for joining us. We're going to take a quick break and then we're back with Sunita Pospore talking about her heroics over the weekend.
With Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Game on! on 2FA.
Coming into the last 50 metres, Pushpure out in front. She's going to take the gold medal. Lubning looking good for silver. And Kiridu has pushed ahead and is now in bronze medal position. It's the last few strokes here. Sanita Pushpure is going to take the gold medal ahead of Austria's Lubning for silver. What a performance from the double world and now double European champion, Sanita Pushpure.
Now, I'm delighted to say we are joined on the line by Sanita Pushpure after an absolutely fantastic weekend for Irish rowing, led by you, Sanita, of course. And it must be so special to be part of all of the everyone's experiences over there and just the great feel-good story that is around Irish rowing.
Hi, everyone, firstly.
Hello.
We've had a pretty good weekend and it was pretty amazing to come home with so many medals, and I suppose we had to keep the momentum going after our juniors performed so well just a couple of weeks ago, and our under-23 team as well came home with a lot of medals. So it's a good few months for Rowing Ireland.
Sanita, congratulations. Heading in, looking at your own race, even pace is everything in every race. And in your own contest, obviously, you weren't leading from the word go. You were behind for the first 500 metres. Did not being in front phase yet, were you always happy with the speed and rhythm that you had yourself?
I think when you're in a race, 2K race, there's a lot of time to kind of move up and down in the positions. I had a solid plan that we worked out with my coach, and I did execute it just the way we were talking about it. And I knew if I stay in touch with Magdalena Lobnik on my left and she would be on my right, because they're really fast starters usually, if I stay in touch with them and the first 500, then I'll be in a really good position to move up then later on at the later stages of the race. So that was my plan, stay with them, and it paid off. Yeah,
I know when we were riding horses you could judge pace by the furlong poles and how fast you were passing them, but in a rowing race, how do you judge your exact pace when you hit the 500, hit the 1000, hit the 1500? How do you know if you're going too fast or too slow?
Well, you kind of have to trust your training a little bit as well. To be honest, I didn't really know if I have that pace in me, but all you can do is just go out and try. And if you blow up, let's say in the last 200 metres, you've done your absolute best and you pushed yourself to the maximum capacity. So then it is what it is. But what gave me encouragement was looking at the women's pair four and boys double, how well they handled kind of the hot pace of the race. And I was like, well, I've done exactly the same training, so I should be okay. And you kind of take a bit of a confidence from performances before from the team, and just had to trust the training and go for it.
So would you say, Sneed, you had a little bit more left in you?
No, the last 30 strokes are quite challenging. So I left it all out there yesterday, and I suppose if I needed to sprint a little bit more, maybe I would find a small little drop of energy there. But yeah, it was pretty good solid pace throughout the race, and I think I left it all out there.
I know there's still a while away from the rescheduled Olympics, but it must give you such confidence, you know, even just to be able to say that out loud, that you know you could have, if you needed to, just went a little bit more.
Yeah, it's just the training that you do. I suppose I didn't really know what kind of form I'll be in at this championship, because we had 3 weeks off during the summer when I did absolutely nothing, no training whatsoever. And we started off like 7 weeks ago, and this championship was the main goal, and that obviously gave us a bit of motivation. But yeah, there wasn't much expectation for this regatta, and I think we really punched above our weight considering all the circumstances during the summer and everything.
Sanita, would you look at that then and think, ooh, maybe we learned something there? A couple of weeks off, 7 weeks in, and think, yeah, maybe that's the way to do it.
I'm afraid not, because you do need that really good base. I mean, I'm happy enough with winning gold after 7 weeks of training, but at the same time, if I want to win Olympics, I need to be faster. And I know everybody else who was racing yesterday, they're going to be much faster for Olympics too. So yeah, I'd say 14 weeks maybe we'll do. joking. We have to train 8 months now. That's it.
Sanita, we spoke to a huge amount of people during the lockdown and the layoff from competitive sport. And we know it was difficult for everybody, like absolutely. And a lot of people were reassessing things. For you, how was it? And, you know, are you happy happy now that we're out the other side of it and that you've, you know, you stuck with it? Because it was difficult for people to stay determined and committed when the Olympics was rescheduled.
Yeah, I think the main problem was lack of motivation and training alone. I found that really, really challenging. Like, I mean, on a grand scheme of things, it was fine. You know, we were all safe at home and the pandemic was kind of going on a downhill as well. So it was all, you could see the positives out of it. But as an athlete, yes, it was really hard because we're so used to that competitive environment in training, and that's what keeps us going and pushes us every day. So it was really hard to go up to that roof and do the session on the erg on your own and try to get the best numbers you can. Yeah, I'd say during the lockdown, I probably didn't, the intention to train well was there, but I don't think I did because subconsciously there was no motivation to push myself to the very limit that I could have done. And considering all that as well, I think I should be even more excited about this result yesterday.
Just on that point, Sunita, you mentioned the sacrifices, and it's only really your family that see it in your sport. How was their reaction being on your great win yesterday?
Yeah, well, my husband said he didn't expect anything less, and I was like, well, thank God he didn't tell me that before the race. Yeah, they're so used to it now, and then I'll have to have a talk. Yeah, they're excited, I think. But yeah, for sure.
Well, they know that you're going to be training, isn't it? 16 times a week you train at the moment, so they know what's coming up over the next 8 or 9 months.
Yeah, they do indeed. They know there'll be self-service all day round, really, for food. Yeah, they've seen me on the hardest days, and they know not to expect much from me on those days as well, so they'll be feeding me probably. Yeah, I think it's probably encouraging for them to see as well that they've seen me on a very low during the lockdown, that I was really struggling, and even heard me maybe talking about retiring maybe or something like that. So yeah, I'd say they're pleased as well.
You mentioned the training group that you have, and a lot of them are the heavyweight girls, and you know, we're looking to see about that women's fours. Do you think they're going to get there? They're going to get that boat?
Oh yes, I think so, and I'm so, so excited for them. They're really going to benefit from this extra year, I think, and very, very excited.
It sounds like you have a really good training group.
We do very good. Dynamic is very good, and especially when we go away, it's so much fun, and it's competitive, and we'll be pushing each other in the water so much, and you might hate each other at one point, but then you get off the water and you know it's all been like so beneficial. Not like hate, but we're so
strongly
competitive.
Dislike.
It's different.
No, we're so competitive, all of us. Yeah.
But do you think, Sunita, that having the women's four would possibly improve your own performance, having them to train with, having them to travel with? Do you think for Rowan Ireland that they will be a benefit to you?
Yes, in a way, like off the water, there's more people to talk to, more people to hang out with, and it definitely wouldn't be as lonely. Like in London, I was on my own, so it was kind of the loneliest Olympics for me. Then it was a little bit more fun in Rio because there was three girls and boys. And now I'm so excited. Like we have, I can't even count fast how many people we have going now. Is it seven? Yes, we have seven people going already, so and potentially 11 or even more. It's very, very exciting. That'd be awesome.
It surely is, Sunita. Thanks a million for taking our call. We wish you all the best for the next 8 months. Enjoy the training.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Thanks.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. A quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way. Game on. GAA.
Now, welcome back to Game On. It has been almost 14 months since Tipperary won their 28th All-Ireland title, and it's almost time for them to get going again. Brendan Maher joins us now. Brendan, I'd imagine a very different test awaits this season.
Yeah, that's for sure, Marie. Strange times, obviously, and everything's going to be a little bit different, but delighted to be back training. I was listening to Sunita there talking about the struggle she had of trying to motivate herself. Definitely experienced that during lockdown, you know, with being away from the whole team environment and pushing each other on, and I didn't realise how much I depended on that, I suppose, or used it, and it was definitely a struggle to try and motivate yourself to train during lockdown.
Brendan, training alone is so difficult. Usually it's only players that are injured that realise it or see it when they're trying to rehab on their own. But to push yourself to do what you're supposed to do on your own with no one to challenge you, how much do you think you actually did?
And I had the injury experience, I suppose, as well. That's different, I think, because it's easy to tap into the self-motivation in that circumstance because you just want to try and get back playing. So you have a clear goal in mind, but it's definitely a bit more challenging or a different type of challenge when I suppose it was the uncertainty of it all. That was kind of what I found the hardest, was that you're training and you're trying to push yourself, but really, you know, like that you're not quite at that level that you would be if you were in the team environment, because you just can't beat that bit of competitiveness. And obviously for our game, it being a team game, to be able to have the whole aspect of being in the right kind of scenario and in a game scenario, that's a different fitness. We all talk about like match fitness, and it's impossible to replicate that when you're training on your own. I was trying to just kind of stay active, keep the body nice and fresh and keep the cardio up as much as possible. But really, I knew in the back of my head, it's going to take me a few weeks. No matter how much I do here, I need to get back into proper training with the team if I'm going to get kind of true fitness.
Will the game be different, do you think? Like, are we going to see more direct hurling, or, you know, kind of tactics going to go out the window a little bit, do you think?
Possibly, you know, like, it's obviously, I think lads will have a good base of fitness built up from club games and that, so I think the quality will still be good. I suppose the conditions and the time of year might have an impact, so it might be more what you would have been used to seeing in the league, those kind of style games. So teams will probably change their tactics a little bit based on opposition, based on weather, and we don't know what kind of weather we're going to have. It's very unpredictable, so I think you'll see different games, but I don't think it's going to hinder the quality. It'll just maybe just be a little bit different, but I think it'll be hugely competitive. I mean, every team has had a nice number of weeks now to prepare leading into it, so I think it has the makings of a great championship.
And then obviously with the weather, cold air, wet days, slower pitches, the ball won't travel as far. It's going to test fitness. There's going to be more running involved.
Yeah, definitely. And as I said there, you'd have that kind of from league games. You would have had that experience. Even I would have gone through it as well last year with the club campaign. We played right through. Our county final actually wasn't until the 3rd of November, and our first championship match at Tipnow was 1st of November. So I was being through it last year, and it definitely does test the body in a way that you wouldn't get during the summer. But in saying that, I think, you know, every team is so well prepared now that, like, everyone's going to be ready for it, and everyone knows what's coming. So I think the quality won't be affected as much as people might think based on conditions and weather. I just think it'll be maybe a different type of quality. We've had some great games in the league over the years, and I don't see any reason why we can't have that now, you know, coming into the championship.
Is it a leveller, though? Like, are conditions a leveller, or is that just a cliche?
I think, it's a good question. Like, and I think you could argue both sides of it. For me, like, definitely teams perform better in different types of conditions. Like, obviously, in Tipperary, people would say, like, oh, they're better with the dry ball, or they're better on the good day because they play fast type and brand of hurling. But I think the good teams, if you want to be really a good team, you need to be able to adapt for every condition. So that's what we're trying to do now, is to maybe change the mindset to think like, well, it actually doesn't matter what the conditions are, we need to find a way to perform here. So that's what teams are going to be trying to do now. Yes, conditions are going to be different than what we're used to, I suppose, in the height of championship, but the team that finds a way to adapt their performance, adapt their tactics, adapt their approach, and get that kind of performance that's good enough to win, obviously is going to be the team that will come out on top. So that's as much the challenge, I think, is for anyone, for most teams.
Brendan, the game is going to be different because it looks like it's going to be a yellow slitter. Joe Canning has been out giving out about it earlier, said it's a strange decision. He's not used to it. The slitter's very hard. He hopes it's not the Boston slitter, whichever one that is. And Derek McGrath says it's been a rush decision. What's your own views on the yellow slitter?
I thought it was a strange decision as well. I would say that. It came out of nowhere. Like, we didn't know the first I saw of it on Twitter on Friday. So, look, I think, again, it's a bit like the conditions. It's a leveller. Everyone's going to be using the same one, so you just have to get used to it and get on with it. I do think it was a strange decision. I'm not sure really why they decided to bring it in now with everything, all the changes that were being made, to throw that into the mix again as well. But, no, look, we'll get used to it over the next few weeks. We'll use it in training, and we'll just get on with it.
Brendan, I'm from Kildare, so hurling and slaters were never high in our agenda, but what is the difference in a white slater and a yellow slater other than the colour?
Well, I think it's more about the supplier. I think that was Joe's reference, maybe, that the slaters we used, we played a Super 11 tournament over in Boston there a number of years ago, and the slaters that we were given that day, it was kind of the first time that the yellow slater was trialled, and the slaters we used were just, they were like rocks, and lads were breaking hurleys and everything trying to hit them. And I think that was the fear, that they were going to be the same ones again. And I see Owen Murphy from Kilkenny, the Kilkenny goalie, tweeted the other day saying he reckoned he was going to need about 500 hurleys for puckouts if we were going to be using them. So I think that's been rectified. I know we used a few of them in training there on Saturday, and they were fine. A little bit different, all right, because it's a different supplier, but I'm not even sure who the official supplier is going to be. Like, I don't know what one is going to be used. That hasn't been communicated to us as of yet, so I presume we'll find out around the next week or two, but for now we're just trying to get used to use them for, I suppose, from the colour and from what they look like in flight and all that kind of thing.
Brendan, every year it pushes on, and you've been the standard setter for last year. Have you pushed on? You know, we talk about stuff like the weather and the slitter, you know, the kind of excuses around it. What about setting a new standard? How's training been?
It's been good. It's been very enjoyable, Donegal. Again, like I mentioned there about, you know, that lack of team environment and all that, and you just crave that. So being in amongst the lads again and training together and pushing each other has been really enjoyable. Like, training has been going fine. The usuals of lads picking up niggly injuries and, you know, everything that goes with it. But it's been very enjoyable, and I think everyone came in with a nice little fresh approach, I suppose, having been away from it for so long. It was 6 months, really, I suppose, that we were apart from each other. So obviously everyone was eager. We had a couple of changes to the panel where we had a couple of lads that were coming in that were after showing club form, and then other lads had to step away due to work commitments and other commitments. So it was nearly almost like the start of a new season kind of a feel. But everyone had a good club campaign under their belt, so we were straight into fairly high level training. Like, you didn't have the pre-season feel where you had to come in and try and build up fitness. It was kind of straight into hurling, which made it more enjoyable. And now I suppose we're starting to hone in. We've just less than 3 weeks now before we play, so it's getting into the 15 and 15s and training games, and lads are trying to put the hand up for the jersey though.
Brendan, obviously keeping ye safe is the most important thing for the GAA, but we've seen with sports that unfortunately COVID-19 can get into camps. We saw it with the Republic of Ireland, we've seen it with Munster, we've seen it with Ulster, we've seen it with Liverpool, you know, all the professional teams as well can't seem to keep it out. Are you concerned at all?
It's definitely a worry. It's definitely in the back of our minds, and it's something that our doctor and our medical team and management are trying to reinforce all the time, how we need to, you know, restrict our movements and limit our contacts, and probably more so than the general public to a certain extent, if we want to make sure that we don't compromise the group. So it's something we're very much aware of. But unfortunately, like, the circumstances we're in, you could do everything right, as we've seen even with certain players there, and just be coming into contact with someone who hasn't been doing everything right, and just unintentionally become a close contact. So, like, it's there, absolutely. But I mean, all we can do is try and do our best, do our own individual responsibilities, and try and make sure we are limiting our contacts, and then do everything right when we get into training and follow the protocols and procedures that are in place for us. And like, after that, it's kind of in the hands of the gods.
I think that's a pretty good synopsis of it. Brendan, obviously it's knockout championship. Your own Borrisaleigh got knocked out in Tipperary in a penalty shootout. Can you see it happening in the club at a county game even? Did you learn anything from the Borrisaleigh game? Will you have a different approach if it happens to you with Tipperary?
I won't have a different approach, actually, funnily enough, because I was asked that question already, because I actually missed two penalties in that game, and I was kind of asked, like, oh, would you, you know, the fact that you missed them, would you do something different? And to be honest, I wouldn't, because I had a routine and I had a kind of a process I went through. And unfortunately, the keeper just read me, like, on the day. He read where I was going and saved them. So I wouldn't do anything differently, but I would say that as a team, we do need to be ready for it. We need to know, like, right, who are the five players going to be, and to have them practiced. That would be the only thing I'd be saying. But yeah, it's not beyond the realms of possibility with, you know, with the format we have, and there has to be a winner on the day. So it's definitely something we need to have in the locker.
I didn't really mean your own technicalities. I more meant tactics as regards putting your best lads first or your weaker lads first. Ah, that kind of way I kind of meant. It certainly wasn't questioned how you were going to strike it.
Sorry, Brendan.
Brendan, have you been practicing though? Like, have you got your five?
No, not yet. No, we haven't got to that level yet. We'd have a good few lads that would be capable of taking them. I'm sure those conversations and would happen management fairly shortly. But not sure if I'll be in there now based on my form.
Right, well, Brendan Maher, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Brendan is speaking as a Bord Gáis ambassador at the launch of their associate sponsorship of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship.
With Green Fern, naturally good food packed with protein. Game on 2FM.
Well, welcome back to Game On this Monday evening. Well, yesterday was, of course, Munster National Day at Limerick Racecourse. And whilst the Munster National went the way of the Gordon Elliott trained, I can't get the horse's name, ridden by Gavin Bruder, it was aforementioned. There was plenty of carnage on the track, Kevin, jockey-wise, and joining us on the line is Kevin O'Ryan from Racing TV, but agent for Davy Russell and Jack Kennedy, who were both injured yesterday. Kevin, have you an update for us?
Yes, good evening, Ruby. Good evening, Donica, Marie. How are you? Davy Russell, obviously, Ruby, has fractured his C6 vertebrae, so he's up in the matter. He was transferred up there last night from Limerick and obviously had a couple of more scans than that this afternoon. He's in good enough spirits, as you can expect. Obviously, he's not overjoyed, but I haven't spoken to him yet. I'm only on the way home from Kilbeggan. And Jack Kennedy obviously fractured his collarbone. So they're obviously going to be out for a while, but for obvious reasons, Jack is going to be back quicker than Davy.
Kevin, Jack's had a torrid time of late. He's only back from a broken leg. Were you talking to him? How's he doing?
Yeah, look, obviously, Ruby is very low. You know yourself, you'd write a novel about injuries and recoveries, and no better man than you to speak about it. But he was very low, obviously, last night. He's only back a month. He was out for 7 months after breaking his femur in, of course, Leopardstown at the Dublin Racing Festival. He's back a month. He's ridden 14 winners. And he breaks his collarbone yesterday. Obviously, very, very low. But look, at the end of the day, you can walk away, you can move everything. It's only going to be 3 or 4 weeks, fingers crossed, to be back then. But, you know, in your time, when you were getting injured in that, Ruby, no matter what anybody says, at the end of the day, it's still a big blow when you know the amount of horses you have to ride. Gordon Elliott obviously has the strongest team of horses, potentially, that he's ever had. And now with the big festival starting to come up, the big guns starting to come out, obviously Down Royal is where Gordon likes to kick off and introduce a lot of those good horses back for the first run. Jack is going to be very touch and go if he's going to be back for that, and that's a big blow to take.
It's a huge blow, and it's a blow for Gordon as well. Obviously he'll have Envoy Allen presenting Percy, Sam Crowe and the likes coming out there. Who will... It's an opportunity for someone, Kevin. Who'll be taking it? Who do you think's in the running to get it?
Well, of course, you know, Ruby, at the end of the day, to lose both of your jockeys at the one time and the one day, two of the best jockeys around, you know, no disrespect to anybody else, and we all know that, it's a massive blow to take, especially when your horses are coming forward. But I spoke to Gordon on Racing TV today, and he said there's going to be plenty of chances there for the likes of Keith Donoghue, who's an integral part of Gordon's setup, Dennis O'Regan, who rode a winner for Gordon this afternoon, Brian Cooper, and whoever else. Well, obviously Robbie Power goes back a long time with Gordon, but Robbie Power, due to COVID, is now based in England, and so obviously he's not going to come in for rides because he's obviously tied up with the Colin Tizard job, and he would have been a big benefactor as well. But it's going to be the best available. There's loads of lads there, but at the end of the day, there's going to be some great opportunities. But at the end of the day, you're missing your two main riders, which is a big blow to the camp.
Absolutely. Just on a different note, Kevin, former champion trainer John Ox is to retire at the end of the season.
Yes, look, it's tinged with sadness. It's a surprise and it's not a surprise, Marie, if that makes sense. Because obviously John is well documented. His fortunes have taken a big dip over the last few years, obviously when he lost the patronage of His Highness the Aga Khan. But 41 years... as training at the highest level from 1979, and it's just a big blow. It's one of the old guns and one of the institutions, really, that is coming to an end. And, you know, it's obviously a sad day for John Ox and his team as well. He's had staff members who have literally worked for nobody else, only John Ox. The likes of Slim O'Neill and Seamus Bailey and Jason McCauley, they've had no other job in their life, only for John Ox. And, you know, to come to a stage that you're down in quality and down in numbers when you were used to dealing with the likes of Eurobird, Petit Eel, Sindar, Alamshire, Namid, Ridgewood, Pearl, the list is endless, and of course, Sea to Stars. I was coming to that room, don't worry about that. You know, it's only 10 years ago. It just goes to show what a game it is, that you can never rest in your laurels, and you can soon be forgotten if you're not getting the results, no matter all your achievements in a short period of time are kind of forgotten. And I think that's the same in businesses throughout, take out racing, sport and businesses in general. But it is a sad day to see one of the great trainers of Irish racing bringing down the curtain on what has been in a long and illustrious career. But, and I don't think John Ox will mind me saying this, he's not going the way he would deservedly go, which was at the top of his game.
I couldn't agree more with you, Kevin. It is a sad day and we wish him the best in the future. Thanks a million for taking our call. Enjoy your drive home from Kilbeggan. Don't eat too much McDonald's. We'll be back on tomorrow night. That's your usual time.
Ruby.
No McDonald's, Kev. Oh, my God.
Which one is it, Ruby? You know it.
I wouldn't mind
probably
McDonald's.
The one
we got plenty of times together, lads. Don't worry. He likes the McDonald's more than I do. He eats more McDonald's than I. See, lads.
Thanks, Kevin. We actually have had plenty of conversations about McDonald's, which are probably better saved for off air. And just before we go, we have a lovely tweet in from Heather Boyle about Sunita, that she embodies the ultimate humble champion. She's a two-time world champion and two-time European champion, and still talks about the strength she gets from her teammates. Well, there you go, lads. On that note, I think it's the perfect way to end.
It is.
Tara Stewart is up next.